flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom.
It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
Goodness sake, kid. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not America's sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Well, this is going to be a really good show today on the Annie Fry Show here on Thursday, January 23rd. It's too bad Annie can't be here for it. This is Ryan Wiggins filling in. Brad Range here, too. We're, of course, the rest of the crew. Annie just won't be here today. I'm guessing a day. You know, just a quick little, like, sickness thing. This is such... I just said it's January 23rd. There is no more January day than January 23rd. Like, if you're in the middle of March or July or September or whatever, and you think of January, you think of this moment of January. And this is exactly what that is. There's a stomach bug going around. I think I got it last night, but it already went through our household, and I'm fine. My whole family's dealing with it. Like, half of St. Louis is dealing with the stomach bug. And then you look out the window, and you're like, hey, look at that. There's not really snow. It's leftover snow from 3 weeks ago.
Leftover snow from 3 weeks ago. And it's not just on the ground. It's still on the streets.
It's still there. Like, you can't, if you're in, well, probably anywhere, but downtown St. Louis, you can't park.
No.
You can't do anything.
Every morning I come in, there's that little school that's below us, and every morning I come in and there's some parent dropping their kid off and they have to park almost in the regular traffic lane because they pushed all the snow into the parking lanes.
And it's ice.
And then they're always pulled up a little bit too far, so I can't get in the opening to the garage. And it's like, just come clean this up.
Everybody in St. Louis is still dealing with this after, what,
bad.
2.5 weeks, almost 3 weeks now. And the problem is that it's I guess it's still like a little bit pretty. We haven't gone full on gray crap snow out of this because it all froze. But that's the problem, is that if you get out of your car and you're anywhere near it, it looks like snow.
Yeah.
But if you step on it, bam, you're going down.
Yeah. Keyword, step on, not step in it.
Exactly.
It's not.
Getting the mail, like, I didn't clear it out well enough and now it's done. Like, I can't touch it. It's just what it is. But the good news is, you know, it's going to get up to 30 today, which doesn't mean melting, but it will be getting into melting territory for tomorrow and the rest of the weekend for a few days. So if you're looking forward to getting some things done, either outside or just like not stepping on that stuff, that's coming soon. Here's what else is coming soon. Hans von Spakovsky in this hour, senior legal fellow, Heritage Foundation. You've heard him many times on the Annie Fry Show. He's going to be here to talk about specifically what I'm going to open with, and we'll see where it goes from there, the birthright citizenship stuff. This is an executive order that, as far as I understand it, is a direct challenge to the 14th Amendment. And really the interpretation of the 14th Amendment.
Yeah, I think it's the interpretation thing. What was the intended meaning of the 14th Amendment when it was written?
So this is really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And so we've never really had this challenge before. We'll see what Hans has to say about the likelihood of this being interpreted the way that the Trump team is intending. But you'll see about that. That's coming up next. Tyrus will try to connect with him as usual on Thursday. And then Hogan Gidley, America First Policy Institute Senior Advisor for Communications. You've seen him on TV 1,000 times. He is going to be here to sort of break down the first few days of the Trump administration, which is important to do because the executive orders, the change of society at large is coming fast and furious. And part of me is really excited to see all these things. Part of me is tapping my foot like, I'm ready for all this to be done now. I want it to be done Tuesday.
I want it now.
I'm Veruca Salt. So it's a weird place to be because while the executive orders are going into place, and, you know, Tom Homan and ICE and all these things are right there ready to go. It's like, oh, yeah, this stuff takes time. Like, this is the part where we see it actually enacted.
Yeah, but ICE is already out there doing their thing.
They are. 300 people arrested yesterday. As far as I understand it, these are people who are not just illegal immigrants, which is a crime we should define. But they are criminal illegal immigrants that they have gone after, which is what they said they were going to do. What's amazing to me is that people who are freaking out and can't believe that this stuff is happening. Can you believe this is the America we're living in?
Is this really what people voted for?
Yes.
And the answer is yes.
This is exactly what people voted for. This isn't stuff he even announced after he was elected.
Right.
This is the stuff he ran on. So to see it happening, I'm not sure why people are freaking out. But we're going to walk through just in this segment what happened yesterday, which is Donald Trump sitting down with Sean Hannity. Now, Brad, before I start playing these clips, and I'm just going to play them in chronological order. You've done a great job of cutting them up, basically, to, if you missed the interview, you'll hear the bulk of what they talked about right now. But when Trump sits down with Hannity, what is Trump looking for out of a Sean Hannity interview?
Well, I think Trump likes talking to Sean Hannity, first of all. So I think he's looking for an interview that's going to be, in his words, very fair. You're fair to me. Hannity will ask the questions in a way that Trump will have a chance to respond. So I think that's what Trump's looking for. And he's looking for a chance to get his message out about what his plans are, his goals are. And then actually, as I went through cutting this, he actually reflected a lot on the campaign and how, you know, the events of the campaign occurred and changed the course of history.
Bingo. That's exactly what I think Trump is looking for out of a Sean Hannity interview, too, which is getting his, you said it, getting his message out. Because Sean Hannity is obviously going to be friendly. I think they're friends enough that they probably text and stuff. I don't know what being friends with Trump looks like, but they're friendly. And so sitting down with Sean Hannity for Donald Trump is getting his agenda out and saying, this is what we've done. They'll talk about it. There's not going to be any stupid gotcha questions. Which, you know, I'm okay with. I'm glad that Trump steps into those, but that's not what this is. And so we're going to walk through exactly what Trump wanted to get out through this interview, starting with this first clip right here.
Well, it was a lot of work. And as you know, I felt that we shouldn't have had to necessarily be here. Could have been done. A lot of work could have been, it would have been over. We wouldn't have inflation. We wouldn't have had the Afghanistan disaster. Wouldn't have October 7th with Israel, where so many people were killed, and you wouldn't have a Ukraine war going on. But with all that being said, I think it's bigger. It's bigger than it, if it were more traditional.
We've talked about that, too, that, yes, term number two is probably going to get more done because there was separation between terms one and two. I do believe that. That's what he just said there. The executive orders are getting all the attention right now, and the picks, you know, that are being confirmed through the Senate or being heard in the Senate are getting a lot of attention. But to me, this is where they went right away. This is clip number two. They're already talking about getting the budget done. Now, this doesn't have to get done until March, but it takes a lot of work. This is a big change. They have to do it through reconciliation. I'm so glad they're talking about this.
And
right,
reconciliation
now
has some specific rules that they need to do. So
this to me is one of the biggest legacies he can leave if they're able to substantially cut not just the size of government, but the spending that the government does.
One big, beautiful bill, two bills. Do you care at this point?
I don't care as long as we get to the final answer. I like the concept of the one bill.
I guess I said one big beautiful, and that's what everyone faces. Actually, it's sort of a nice sound to it. But I do like that concept. It could be something else. It could be a smaller bill and a big bill. Right. But as long as we get to the right answer.
You know, he has pressed Republicans in the House specifically to really get on board with his agenda. My hope is, though, that that agenda doesn't mean, well, we'll spend more now and we'll cut later. The tax cuts have to happen. That's going to expire, so that has to happen. Everybody knows that. But this is a real chance to change the size and scope of spending at the federal government level. And I believe, personally, there are enough fiscally responsible Republicans. Not all of them are, but there are enough of them that could gum up the works that we should see a good bill here.
Yeah.
Agreed?
Sure, yeah.
Number three is Trump talking about FEMA.
Now, I will say that Los Angeles has changed everything because a lot of money is going to be necessary for Los Angeles, and a lot of people on the other side want that to happen. And
North Carolina, too.
Well, they don't care about North Carolina. The Democrats don't care about North Carolina. What they've done with FEMA is so bad. FEMA is a whole other discussion.
Yeah.
Because all it does is complicate everything. FEMA has not done their job for the last 4 years. You know, I had FEMA working really well. We had hurricanes in Florida. We had Alabama tornadoes. But unless you have certain types of leadership, it gets in the way. And FEMA is going to be a whole big discussion very shortly because I'd rather see the states take care of their own problems. If they have a tornado someplace and if they let that state... Oklahoma is very competent. I love Oklahoma.
Yeah, he's right. The government doesn't... The bigger it is, the worse it's run and the more waste there is.
And the reason that is basic... You know, the basic thing about that is the farther away the government is from the people that it's supposed to be representing and serving, the less they have a connection with and understanding of what's going on. And whenever he was there talking about FEMA, he says FEMA can be good as long as you have competent people in there or the right kind of people. And what he's talking about there is people that are actually focused on the goal of FEMA, which is to provide emergency management relief. When we looked back at what happened in Florida and North Carolina, it came out that FEMA was telling people not to go to people's houses that basically had Trump signs. I don't know if that was the exact text message. They was like, well, that one person has been fired, and the person that sent that message to that person has both been fired, and that doesn't reflect FEMA. But it does show that within that organization, there's, I don't know if cultural rot is the right word, politics, whatever it is, that kind of person, that attitude shouldn't be in FEMA. And so whenever you put that closer to home, you put it in the states, if you get Oklahoma helping Oklahomans, they're going to care about them more than, say, somebody from Virginia or Washington, D.C. would care about somebody from Florida or Western North Carolina.
It also showed that FEMA was being used to do things that had nothing to do with disaster relief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's a big problem. That's across the board. But when people go, well, why wouldn't you fund FEMA? Well, what Democrats did in the last 4 years, especially, is they took money that was allocated to FEMA to start spending on other priorities because they could pressure people. Why wouldn't you spend money on FEMA? This is disaster relief until we allocate it separately.
Yeah, yeah. And it turns out that the disaster they were trying to relieve is the disaster they created at the southern border. And so now they're trying to relocate illegal immigrants, illegal aliens all over the country using FEMA funds.
That's exactly right. Here's the next one from Trump talking about how Democrats can't govern.
It's turning out to be bigger. And I think one thing is happening is people are learning that they can't govern and that their policies are terrible. I mean, they don't want to see a woman get pummeled by a man in a boxing ring.
No.
They don't want to see men in women's sports and otherwise. They don't want to see them. And they don't want to have transgender for everyone. They don't want a child leave home as a boy and come back 2 days later as a girl. A parent doesn't want to see that. And there are states where that can happen.
Oh.
They don't want to see taxes go through the roof. Like, this is the only group of people they want to raise your taxes. They say, we want to raise your taxes.
That is a weird thing that he brings up at the end there. And I've seen Jon Stewart talking about this and embracing it. Like, Democrats have embraced that they are the party of high taxes.
Yeah.
I never thought that could exist and be a winning message. And I guess it's not.
It didn't work this time.
It's not winning. But I can't believe that they've just said, yeah, we're the party of high taxes. It's the way we want big government.
Well, if you look at the Democrats' strategy over the past 4 to 8 years, it's always been trying to create jealousy and division. You know, be it through these DEI policies or even like taxes. That's class warfare. They're like, oh, look at how much money they have. They don't need that money. Have you ever come across somebody that's been talking about this? They're like, it's immoral for a billionaire to have that much money. And it's like, it's not immoral if they earned it legally. And they think, well, what we're going to do is we're going to play on these people's jealousies and we'll get these people riled up against those people. And then we can get all the people who make less than the billions to gang up on those people. So that way we get voted into office. They don't care about the money.
No, but Obama said that it's Republicans doing culture wars.
Yeah, Obama's a liar.
I don't know, Brad.
When we get to hoaxes, that man is a liar.
We got a lot planned today. The minute we heard that Annie was not going to be here, we went into overdrive, and we have a great show planned for you. So we'll kind of wrap this segment up later because there's a lot more that Trump wanted to get across in that interview with Sean Hannity. We're really in a new era just of media because we have a president who's accessible, who will talk to basically anybody. I was shocked to see Marco Rubio do his first interview as Secretary of State with Good Morning America. Yeah. So it's not just Trump. You know, he's got people in there who are willing to talk to anybody, who can handle tough questions, and will call out bad questions.
Man, Marco Rubio's good at that.
And we've got some great sound on some of these that we're going to play for you later. So hopefully you can stick around for more than just this moment when you're in your car, maybe getting lunch or whatever, because we've got a great show for you. Even though Annie is not here, we assume she will be back tomorrow after just a quick sick day. Hans von Spakovsky is coming up next. He is always our Thursday guest because he is awesome. He's the senior legal fellow at Heritage Foundation. And we have, all of a sudden, for the first time, a whole bunch of executive orders to ask him about how they're going to play out, what the legal challenges look like to a lot of Trump's agenda. That's all next on The Annie Fry Show.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This next order relates to the definition of birthright citizenship under the 14th Amendment of the United States.
That's a good one. Birthright. That's a big one.
What about that one in the court? That one is likely to be passed.
Could be. They think we have good grounds, but you could be right. I mean, you'll find out. It's ridiculous. We're the only country in the world that does this with birthright, as you know. And it's just absolutely ridiculous, but you know, we'll see. We have very good grounds.
We the people of the United States.
More perfect.
Our form of our perfect union.
Heritage legal expert Hans von Spakovsky.
Hans is here as he is every Thursday. Hans, thanks for being here.
Well, I appreciate you having me back.
So let's lay the groundwork and not just assume that everybody knows what birthright citizenship is. If you wouldn't mind just explaining birthright citizenship before we get into this discussion.
Birthright citizenship is a legal concept that almost no one in the world recognizes that says that if you are born in a particular country, you are a citizen of that country, no matter who your parents are. Doesn't matter if they're illegally in that country. Doesn't matter if they're a foreign diplomat in that country. If you're born in that country, you're a citizen of that country.
And I'm asking a little bit of the history here, so if you don't know, it's okay. But why is that just something that is in America and is nowhere else.
Ah, but it's not in America. And that's the mistake that all the critics are making and why Donald Trump is correct. Citizenship is defined by the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which is one of the Reconstruction Amendments passed after the Civil War. And what all the critics the reason the critics are wrong is that if you look at that, it's a very simple sentence. What it says is that you're a citizen of the United States if you are born in the U.S. and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Now, everybody concentrates on just the first part, born in the United States. They ignore the second part, subject to the jurisdiction thereof. I've actually done a lot of research on this and gone back and looked at what the sponsors of the 14th Amendment in Congress said. And what they meant by that phrase was that you owed your political allegiance to the U.S. and not any other country. And the easy way to understand that is that, look, if a German tourist comes to the U.S. and she has a baby here, that baby is a citizen of Germany, not the U.S., because even though they were born here, they owe their political allegiance to the German government, not the U.S. government. And that was recognized for 100 years after the ratification of the 14th Amendment. It was only late in the Roosevelt administration that they suddenly started saying, oh, well, we're going to ignore that second part, and we'll just issue passports to anybody who was born in the U.S. And what the president is trying to do is reverse that policy and go back to the way the 14th Amendment was originally interpreted and applied.
Hey, Hans, this is Brad. My question with that answer, that what raised the question to me is whenever we're looking at legal theories and understanding what the Constitution says, how important is right. it to go back and look at what the original authors of said amendment were intending by it?
Well, that's very important, and particularly in this case where you're trying to understand what does that language mean, subject to the jurisdiction thereof. And I'll tell you the other thing that the mistake people are making. The critics say, subject to the jurisdiction of, well, if you're in the U.S., you're subject to our jurisdiction. No, that's territorial jurisdiction. What that means is if that German tourist comes to the U.S. and mugs me, that German tourist can be criminally prosecuted because they're part of our territorial jurisdiction. But they're not subject to the political jurisdiction of the U.S. That German tourist can't be pulled into jury duty. The German tourist can't be drafted into the military if the draft were brought back. That's the difference that we're talking about here. And look, there's only been three cases in the entire history of the U.S. before the Supreme Court that even peripherally touched on this. Let me tell you about one of the most important ones, because that illustrates this.
Yeah.
In 1884, a U.S. Indian sued the federal government saying, hey, I should be considered a citizen of the United States. The Supreme Court, because I was born in the United States. Supreme Court said, no, you are not a citizen of the United States because you owe your political allegiance to your tribal government, not the United States. Okay, that explains it. And in fact, you know, the only reason Indians are considered citizens of the U.S. is because in 1924, Congress passed the Indian Citizenship Act. If we had birthright citizenship, there would have been no need for Congress to ever pass that law. And what's been happening for decades now is just a policy misinterpretation of the 14th Amendment.
So, Hans, you said that 1884, that's a Supreme Court case you're referencing, right?
Right, right. What the critics like to point to one other case. There was one subsequent case in which the Supreme Court said that the son of permanent lawful resident aliens would be considered a citizen. But that's because at the time, remember, we had the Chinese Exclusion Acts those very racist laws that said that no Chinese person could ever become a U.S. citizen. Look, that was a misinterpretation of the 14th Amendment. But even the best case that the critics have only said that the children of permanent legal resident aliens would be considered a citizen. That doesn't apply to illegal aliens. And we've never, ever considered that the sons and daughters of diplomats, foreign diplomats, are U.S. citizens either.
So, Hans, when Trump signs an executive order like this, my assumption is that it's been very, very well crafted with all of this in mind. Their intent is for it to pass legal muster. Is it that they're trying to get this to the Supreme Court? Is that the whole goal?
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly what is going on here. And look, as you know, a bunch of states have said they're suing. It's all blue states. They're suing. Well, I don't know what they're suing about. This order doesn't affect the states. This only affects the federal government. This affects, for example, the State Department. The State Department now, when somebody applies for a U.S. passport, they're going to have to show that not only were they born in the U.S., but at the time they were born, one or both of their parents were U.S. citizens. It doesn't affect what the state of Illinois does. And the Illinois governor was one of the people that was criticizing the president and saying, wrongly, oh, it's always been the law of the land that we have birthright citizenship. I mean, that's just factually a total lie.
Hans von Spakovsky with a senior legal fellow, Heritage Foundation, giving us all of the lowdown, especially on this one, because there's going to continue to be a lot of discussion about this birthright citizenship law or executive order, whatever we're calling it. So is it possible, though, that if it's intended that this EO is supposed to work its way to the Supreme Court, that courts will throw it out on standing because they say, well, the states don't have anything to do with this?
Well, they could make that claim, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think I think they'll let it go forward. And the reason is, look, by the time he left office, Joe Biden had beaten Donald Trump, I think, by one judge. In other words, Donald Trump in his 4 years appointed more judges to the federal courts than any prior judge in U.S. history. Biden beat him by one, and that was because Democrats really wanted that. The problem is that every single one of the judges nominated by Joe Biden, they are the most left-wing, far-left radicals ever to sit on the bench of the U.S. court system. So what's going to happen is all these states, the ACLU, other suing, they're going to venue shop. They're going to file a lawsuit before the most liberal Biden judge they can find, because they know that judge is going to ignore the law, ignore all the history of the amendment that I just told you about, and rule against Trump just based on ideology. So that'll guarantee they'll get the court. They'll probably get a stay against what Trump's done, but it'll work its way up and the Supreme Court will take the case.
So last question on this topic, Hans, how long is this expected to take? And in the meantime, what happens to the executive order?
Well, that'll depend on what the courts say about it. Right now, that order is in place. I have no doubt, like I said, some liberal, out-of-control federal judge will issue a stay against it. Even if the lower courts, the trial courts, the courts of appeal, even if they work quickly on this, I don't think this will get to the Supreme Court at the earliest before the fall of next year.
So, yeah, okay, so that's about what I expected. I was going to ask you about some other things, Hans, but before I do, you brought up another issue that is very interesting, and that's about the number of judges that each president was able to put through during their terms. It sounds like they were almost equal, Trump's term and Biden's term.
Right. That's true.
Have you heard anything in Washington, D.C. about this being another top priority of putting through judges now that you have a Republican Senate and a Republican president?
You know, I haven't heard that because they've been dealing with so many other issues. But I have no doubt that will be a very important priority, because it was for the first Trump administration. They understood, the folks in the Trump White House, how important it was to actually get good judges into those positions. I mean, look, that's one of the reasons we finally have a fairly good U.S. Supreme Court, because of the three slots that Trump was able to fill on that court. So I have no doubt that they will put a big emphasis on this. But look, they've been so busy with all these other, frankly, wonderful executive orders they've issued that that'll come next, filling up judge slots.
Well, I'm tapping my foot here. I mean, it's been 4 days, and I haven't heard anything about it. So, hey, Hans, while we're speaking, Fox News reporting right now, kid you not, that a judge has blocked the birthright citizenship executive order.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised. I'm sure they venue shopped and found some liberal judge.
you want to know where it is?
Who will rule on their side.
U.S. District Court in Seattle, Washington. Surprise.
No kidding. Yeah, what a surprise.
Hey, before we run out of time with you, I did want to ask you about some of these pardons. You know, this is a big group of people to pardon. Although, you know, by my count, Trump pardoned, you know, 1,500 January 6ers and still didn't eclipse the number of people Joe Biden pardoned in the last few days of his administration either. So it's a lot of pardons. But how does that process work? Because I saw a lot of people online saying, you know, some of these prisons were not, you know, not just, they were kind of just holding on to the prisoner and saying, well, there's a process for this. Like, how does that work?
You know, that it's an interesting question. Normally what happens with the pardon process is there's actually an office at the Department of Justice, and people who want to get a pardon or want to get clemency normally apply for it. The Justice Department reviews the case and then makes a recommendation to the president. That obviously didn't happen, certainly, with the Biden administration, which, you know, Joe Biden pardoned thousands of prisoners, and there's no way that the Justice Department actually reviewed any of those cases. With Donald Trump, look, he ran saying he was going to do this. So this is no surprise to anybody. And the difference, you know, the difference between the two, the most that anybody did of the J6ers was really criminal trespassing. You know, not a single police officer was killed. In fact, it was only unarmed demonstrators who were killed. Compare that to Joe Biden, who pardoned murderers, rapists, thieves, drug dealers. I mean, the difference is stark between the two presidents.
You know, Hans, I said that was the last question I have for you, but I lied. I got one more. Hopefully you got time for one more.
I do.
The other question that I wanted to hit on that I almost forgot about was starting day one, so starting Monday of Trump's term, what has changed concerning the border? You know, you can't build a wall that fast. So what exactly has changed in the week or few days that Donald Trump has been president versus when Joe Biden was at the border?
Well, I'll tell you, the biggest change is that he issued an executive order declaring a national emergency at the border and closing it. What that means is that the Biden administration, whenever an illegal alien came across the border, the Biden administration would allow them in, process them, which means establish a record for them, and release them, where they would then disappear into the interior of the country. Donald Trump has actually shut down the border. So every single illegal alien trying to get across the border, if they make it across and they're caught, they're being turned around and sent back. So the flow into the country has basically wherever they're caught has gone down to zero as compared to the tens of thousands who were coming in almost every day out of the Biden administration. That is a sea change and what's going on at the border.
So Trump was able to do that, and it sounds like what that means is when Biden said, no, I can't do that, you have to pass a bill first, that he was lying.
He was lying.
What?
I mean, that was an absolute lie by Joe Biden. The president had the power to close the border. Joe Biden did under of an applicable federal law any time during his presidency. He just did not want to do it.
Wow. Well, Hans, thank you so much for jumping around from issue to issue. There's been a lot of executive orders signed, so I figured we'd have to jump around. But I really appreciate your expertise on these things, as always, every Thursday here on the Annie Fry Show.
All right. Take care.
Love Hans. If you ever meet Hans, too, he is just the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah.
You know, there are people, I've been in radio for a long time and met artists, you know, I worked in music radio and most of them are great, but every now and then you meet somebody, you're like, oh, that person is completely different than the way they sound on the radio. Hans is not. Hans is like the nicest guy in the world, and just really appreciate when he comes into town. You know, we do events and things like that that we invite you guys to. If that happens again, we will of course invite you to a Heritage event if we have that on the horizon. Right now, we have to do a hard break into a segment that I usually love, but I really don't know what this is going to be like because I don't lead Wiggins
Ooh,
America.
I know what it's going to
when
be
when I'm hosting. So I know that Ethan's doing
Ethan's going to do it, and it's going to be younger, smarter, and better.
I don't love that. I kind of like the way it usually is. So let's see if he can try to just duplicate the brilliance of Wiggins America, I think is what the goal is. Stick around, and I think he's talking about New Year's resolutions. We're going to talk a little bit about crypto, too. So keep it here. Be right back.
Is the Annie Fry Show.
I can see why sitting in this chair, why Annie's always like, oh, great, it's time for Wiggins America. It's so much funnier to be like, this is going to suck than if I were like, this is probably going to be a great segment.
Hey, Ethan, go ahead and clip that, and we'll play that for Annie later.
Yeah, I'll use that. How often do you say walking into studio, being in this spot, this is going
to
suck?
Well, I just go with it. You know, I think it's funnier to not even like try to pretend like you're doing anything good. Like, I've got a pretty good persona going that I'm lazy and I just eat terribly.
You know, he sends me the Wiggins America topics ahead of time, and I'll look at them. And then I'll be like, Ryan, are you sure that we can do X, Y, and Z with this? And he's like, I'm loving all of the scrutiny I'm getting all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If people don't see you on the stream, they would probably think you weigh 350 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Based on the way that I talk about eating Airheads all day and stuff.
Well, I mean, it's the little Debbie.
I am a little bit jealous of your ability to do that.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It's not a superpower. But it's close.
I don't know. I give it to you. That's a superpower.
No, I really want... I'm sorry that I'm going into a different issue here. I don't really like it when people are like, her superpower is hospitality. No, that's not a superpower.
It's a gift
superpower
to the
spirit. Would be like shooting light out of your hands or flying. Those are superpowers. Superpowers are not that you can cook well.
You seem really passionate
about this,
Ryan.
I you know what? That's part of like I'm writing my second book.
So you don't think
that's part of it.
You don't think it's superhuman to eat the amount of junk food that you eat and
it's borderline. I'll give you that. But it's not a superpower. It's just, you know, something I'm extremely good at.
What's it called when you can eat like crap but it like doesn't affect your weight, like you burn calories like quicker? What's that called?
Metabolism.
Yeah, you just have really good metabolism or high metabolism, I guess.
Yeah, or
usually they have energy though,
or you have a superpower,
whatever you want to call it. I just don't love the superpower thing being thrown around. It's like when they come out with a new channel and it'd be like, oh, this is Animal Planet, and tonight we're going to show Jersey Shore. You're like, You have lost your mission. You're not using the words right anymore.
The Learning Channel is a great example of that.
Exactly.
Here's PBS Kids. Now Jersey Shore.
Yeah, whatever it is. Like, it drove me crazy. Here's the Goat Channel. We're going to show you some sheep. No, show me goats.
Is the Goat Channel. Is the Goat Channel a real thing?
No.
Oh.
Speaking of the goat.
Wiggins! Oh! Wiggins!
Way too high of praise, Brad. Way too high of praise.
Well, he said goat, and then he played my sound.
I know. That's why I'm saying it's too high of praise for you.
This is the first time you've been in here since I was out last week, and I heard you took a lot of shots at me. I didn't get to hear them all.
Did I, Brad?
Oh, for sure.
I don't even remember.
You were saying
what
how much better you do the segment. Yeah, now I get to sit here.
Wiggins America,
my feet
better,
up.
Younger, better, smarter.
I'll be judging you the whole time. Go ahead.
Well, you know what? I will just I will follow those comments up with what you said to me the first time, before the first time that I ever hosted Wiggins America,
yeah,
which was something along the lines of fail onward and upward.
Yeah, that's about right.
But it said fail. That's how it started. I'm like, really, you know, that would, you know, if we were to incorporate or change that intro at any point, you know, throwing the mission statement in there, I think, would be really good. Before we get into that, you know, we had a funny comment about, we were talking earlier about
crypto.
About crypto. And
yeah, that's our poll today. Have you bought crypto?
And I am a no on this, but, you know, this past weekend was Winter Warm-Up, which is an event that Cardinals Care puts up every January Martin Luther King weekend. And this got brought up with a very popular prospect for the Cardinals, rising star right now in Quinn Matthews, who was somehow this got brought up. I don't
Somebody
know how.
Walked up to a rising baseball star and was like, what do you think about Bitcoin?
What's your thoughts on crypto?
They do sit down with the media, with all of them, and then they go and they meet fans and they sign autographs and there's different Q&As and stuff. So I'm not sure at what point this was asked.
You know, I will say this. Of all subjects that don't make sense to ask in a press conference like that, I'm not surprised that somebody goes, what do you think about Bitcoin? Because if you think about Bitcoin, you really think about Bitcoin. It's like somebody sitting down with the latest prospect and being like, hey, did you know that I CrossFit?
Anyway.
Are Bitcoiners the CrossFitters of the financial world?
Yes.
His love for crypto somehow came out, and he is quoted saying, I love crypto. I asked my mom, how mad would you be if I put my money in, is it Dogecoin? Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
In Dogecoin. And she was like, yeah, this is going to be a short conversation. But apparently at one point, he was actually considering his income from the Cardinals being in Bitcoin, which,
that's
or
pretty
in crypto,
cool.
I guess, which I think is hilarious.
Yeah, we said crypto.
Yeah, not Bitcoin.
So you really could buy anything, but
right.
People really criticize crypto because of all the weird, dumb. You know, I mean, one of them right now that's doing really well is Trump Coin. I have no idea what the ethics are of running that, but that's one of the reasons we're asking the question
today. I read his net worth on paper is like 89% Trump Coin.
Right now?
Yes.
That doesn't surprise me.
It's like tens of billions of dollars.
What was the Hawk to a girl? What was her...
Was it Hawk to a coin?
Hawk to a coin?
Yeah, something like
or
that.
Something like that, yeah.
But these things, the weird ones like that... Now, Trump's may stick around because he's the president of the United States, but when Hawk to a starts a coin, they will rise fast and fall fast.
Yeah, they're called meme coins.
And so people try to get on that wave, and some of them lose a lot of money doing it. And so that's where it gets really risky. Whereas Bitcoin is actually, you know, fairly stable. It's gone up a lot recently. And so I guess, you know, you could say that it's not stable and that it's doubled its value in the last couple of years. But
right. Which I think it's just hilarious how it's kind of taken over, I guess, in some aspects for some people. And then some people, which I think would be at least me, and I think Brad, is like, wait, what is it again? Like, what is crypto?
In typical Wiggins America fashion, we should probably save your content that you brought for later because we've got off on the side subject, which happens basically like half of the times that I do this.
So would you say then that I did pretty well in filling in, I guess you would say?
I would say you failed onward and upward.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. I kind of followed your advice.
I'm not a huge fan. I don't really love a whole lot about this segment. Although I do love it when we just start talking. Like yesterday, I mean, it was all over the place. We were talking about going to Disney World and I don't remember what else, but it was all over.
What was the, I don't even remember yesterday's topic. It was something to do with food though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the latest in food trends. And it had to do with
hot honey, right? Or sweet. Or,
well, yeah. It was what was popular in 2024. What was the big trend? And it was sweet heat. And you saw it everywhere. And I'm doing this again because nobody still believes me for
and
some
then,
reason.
And then we got into, you know, that's what you call Brad. And then the Disney World trip and the anniversary. And that was all over the place. Annie actually asked me during segment to go back and track every single spot that we went during that week in America. I didn't do it, but, you know.
Ethan's like, I have a real job to do.
Half of the things that were like, Ethan, can you cut that? Ethan never hears it. Ethan never does it.
Yeah, like the shirtless segment. Yeah, I was like, I had no idea what was going on.
I had to play that back
for him. It took almost a full, like, 6 hours for me to actually hear what happened.
It wasn't until I tagged you in the video that
I was like, so this is what they were talking about. They were accusing me of walking around studio just on my own time, just shirtless.
It's your fault for not paying attention. You got to listen to every single moment of the Annie Fry Show. That's actually what I'm telling the audience right now. If you're listening to the Annie Fry Show, the problem with you is that you're not going to listen to the entire show because you're going to miss so much that we're going to do nothing but inside jokes tomorrow and you're not going to be in on it. So you got to listen to the
Neither
whole thing.
Neither is Annie.
Yeah, right. Annie's not here. We think she'll be back tomorrow, by the way.
We blame the people for not listening to these 6 minutes right here. It's their fault.
We blame you, the listener. We should do that more. It is 12:56. We will be right back after the top of the hour break.